Hello, this is A Country Breakfast. I'm Edwina Farley. How do you feel about your food being picked, packed and sorted by a team of illegal workers, often underpaid, overworked and abused?
I think it's a sad indictment on our industry, and it doesn't reflect the real farming community. In every business anywhere, you're going to have people that are going to exploit people. And this time it looks like some of the farmers, whether they know it or not.
And we'll head to Australia's beef capital to meet the next generation of farmers. First though, a look at the week in rural news with Tony Allen. And Tony, illegal farm workers caught the government's attention this week as well.
Yes, well, it was all started by the Four Corners report on Monday night, revealing exploitation of some foreign workers. Some were underpaid, some were even sexually harassed, and it was pretty sad stuff and pretty upsetting stuff. And very few in the industry have questioned what Four Corners alleged. It seems more of an admission that this does happen and it's time to start stamping it out. The federal government, for its part, has condemned what it saw on Four Corners too. And one of the things the government is pushing for is changes to make it mandatory for young visitors on working holiday visas to produce pay slips when they apply to renew their visas for a second year. That's to prove they weren't being exploited. There are other ideas, which I'll mention shortly, that came from the horticulture industry. But overall, the government is saying it still has confidence in the 457 and the 417 migrant worker visa programs. There is a need for the labour, and the government is not going to back down on those programs, but it wants to reform them. And Mr. Joyce says the Assistant Minister for Immigration, Michaela Cash, will be responsible for that reform of the visa system.
We'll be over this one like a rash, and Michaela Cash is just the right person. She has clearly expressed her disgust with this. We want to attract people into our nation for these 457, 417 visa processes. This neither helps us attracting them, nor does it help the farmers.
And the horticulture industry is proposing migrant workers be given a green card, a so-called green card by the Department of Immigration. A group called Voice of Horticulture has suggested this, and the chair of it, Tanya Chapman, says it would be a photo ID card that would have a smart chip in it with information that farmers and workers could check with a mobile phone.
As migrant workers come into regions, they will have already had an induction of sorts. So they will have the basic understanding of OH&S. They will have been ticked off that they have the correct working visas, tax file numbers, superannuation. And all of that information will be stored on a green card.
Having a look at other news now, and it's a sort of dreary time, I guess you could say, and a bit depressing, certainly, for anyone involved in lamb production.
Yes, the lamb industry is in a bad way at the moment, although they do think their future is pretty secure. But at the moment, there's not much lamb around, partly because of drought in parts of Australia and because there's not much international demand on the market, which is a contrast with beef, where Australian beef is booming. This week, Australia's biggest meat processor, JBS Australia, stood 260 factory staff down, announced it would halve lamb production at its meatworks at Bordertown in South Australia and Brooklyn in Melbourne. And Richard Harvey from the Rural Marketing Agents Association expects that several other meat processors will do the same soon.
I can see processors having extended shutdowns. But the only ramifications of that for them, you know, we've got to look at the big picture here. Your workforce element is a very big factor. And if they are long-term shutdowns, people just move and go to another job or another work somewhere else where they can keep the cash flow going. Because in that meat industry, they don't get paid if they're not working.
An interesting story about processed mushrooms, which we don't tend to have anymore, but there was an issue about them at some point.
Yes, if you like those shiitake mushrooms or whatever that are dried out or whatever.
Or your champignon tin.
Yes, they might be a little bit cheaper soon because the Australian Anti-Dumping Commission is going to remove the tariff on preserved mushrooms imported from China. And there's a little backstory to this because It's sad that mushroom processing in Australia no longer exists. The last mushroom cannery, Windsor Farms in New South Wales, went into liquidation in 2013, and that was 8 years after Windsor Farms and the Mushroom Growers Association spent $400,000 persuading the authorities to whack a 5% anti-dumping tariff on processed mushrooms from China. Now an importer has applied for the tariff to end because Australia no longer produces any preserved mushrooms or any mushrooms in brine.
No, all those funny ones in butter sauce. Yeah, you don't see a lot of it, really. To Victoria now, and some big news. I feel like we've talked about this story for decades now, grazing in Victoria's national parks.
Yes, there's been movement at the station, and according to the new Victorian Labor government, alpine grazing is banned forever in Victorian national parks. The coalition government, the previous one, did allow, controversially, cattle into the national parks for a trial. It argued that grazing the national parks could reduce the risk of bushfires, and they were testing that out. Now, a Labor bill has passed Victoria's upper house, which means it's now law, banning the scientific trials and thus stopping alpine grazing. But Jeff Borman from the Fishers and Shooters Party, which was one of the upper house parties that did oppose the ban, doesn't think the issue is closed.
Look, I don't think the alpine grazing debate will ever be over. Clearly, the coalition government had a different view to the current Andrews government. And at one point in time, just given the nature of politics, the coalition will end up back in power, and I suspect they might try and deal with it their way.
When it comes to welfare-oriented stories to do with animals, we're usually talking about industries trying to team up with welfare organisations or certainly defend themselves against them. A different approach from the dairy industry.
Yeah, the dairy industry said no to the advances of the RSPCA, which wanted an animal welfare-approved milk brand. The RSPCA wanted to develop a label for milk produced to welfare-friendly standards. But the president of Australian Dairy Farmers, the lobby group, Noel Campbell, says that would have divided the dairy industry.
We believe that a brand that was RSPCA labelled would indicate that any milk that was actually provided under another label had practices that were less than good practices for animal health and welfare. So therefore we believe that would distort the message. We need to have a brand that's Aussie dairy.
And that farmer power, if you like to call it, also has reared its head in the case of shearing.
Yes, we've spoken before about the campaign by the group PETA, or People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, against the shearing industry. Quite recently, PETA's campaign used a model holding a fake sheep covered in blood with the headline, "Here is the rest of your wool coat," and the aim of the campaign was to suggest that shearing was a cruel industry. Now, the farmers were the ones who noticed that it wasn't really a real sheep in the ad, and Victorian Farmers Federation President Peter Toohey said that using social media, which was then picked up by the major metropolitan media, the farmers exposed that fake image and they beat Peter at its own high-tech media game.
Farmers are seeing that, they're starting to learn how to do the tweeting stuff, and they're seeing the value of social media. So I think it's starting to grow, and they're seeing the value that when we get together collectively and use this social media, it engages the broader community and people understand what's going on. So we've got a voice.
And an interesting alignment, I guess you could say, between the Country Women's Association and medicinal marijuana.
Yes, the Country Women's Association has gone in recent years into much more controversial issues, and the old image of the CWA, there's still a bit of it around, but it's actually a pretty forward-thinking organisation. And the New South Wales branch of the CWA has passed two motions to support legalisation of medicinal marijuana. One motion called for its use in medical cases, and the other one called for it to be legal to grow, manufacture and distribute marijuana for medical purposes. And CWA Health Vice President Lois Starley says the understanding of medicinal cannabis has increased enormously in the 13 years since the CWA first debated the issue.
To see a motion like this come through and be carried so very successfully really does give weight to the argument that it is time to really consider making this medicinal marijuana freely available to those patients who need it. It's for medical reasons only.
And given that some state parliaments are also looking at the issue, it has become quite a mainstream and far less controversial issue than it used to be.
It's interesting. Tony, you can now devote the rest of your time to tweeting stuff.
Oh, non-stop.
As beautifully put before by Peter Toohey. Thank you, Tony. You can head online for the latest news, of course, at abc.net.au/rural.